Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Tuesday. Live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be and listening, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. That Jamal Murray injury for the Nuggets is awful.
Sucks.
But, you know, it's the NBA got into a weird situation, Joey, so they didn't want to keep waiting and waiting. A lot of this is the collective bargaining. Like, there's so many games you have to play, or the owners have total control in the next negotiations, so you need games. But unfortunately, for teams like the Lakers and the Miami Heat, Heat had all sorts of injuries to start the year.
Yeah.
Because you're asking these players to get no offseason. And so, you know, now Miami's healthier now, but early in the season, a lot of injuries. And Denver's was one of those teams that played later, and the Lakers have had injuries. They played later. So, you know, some of these teams, 8, 9 of these teams, haven't had as many injuries because they weren't in the playoffs. And so they got a real offseason. But, you know, it's the pandemic has we've all had to, as a nation, kind of push through some things.
Yeah.
We had to play in a bubble in the NBA and in hockey and in college. We're all making sacrifices. Like, you just, this is the way it is in life, in the pandemic, is we're all making sacrifices. In the NBA, everybody this morning is like, you shouldn't have done the condensed schedule. But Adam Silver didn't want to do it either. Nobody wanted to do it.
Yeah, nobody wanted it.
But you had to do it because Adam Silver, who's very pro player, is like, fellas, we got to hit a number of games so you have some control and some leverage in negotiations down the road.
It was probably just bad parenting to be super against load management and have a condensed season right at the same time.
Well, like, you and I talked about this. And I don't think the league did this. Didn't you and I talk about this? What the NBA should have done is taken the final four teams left in the bubble last year. Lakers, Heat, Denver, and was it Boston? Who did Miami beat in the East?
Yeah.
It was Boston.
Yeah.
Take those four. Let them start like 3 to 4 days later. It's only 3 to 4 days. And their first seven games are all at home and spaced out. So they have to play catch-up later in the year. But you give the final four teams a really easy first 5 weeks.
Well, people would have complained about that.
I know they would have. But give them more. Give them, like now, you're going to ask them to play a little more road late in the season. But you just take the final four teams and say, we're going to make your first 5 weeks here. By the way, your travel games for Miami, have them play Orlando twice.
Yeah, just ease those teams
back
into the season.
Have them play Atlanta three times. Give them a really easy, like the Lakers, play the Clippers a bunch early. Play Phoenix a bunch early. Play Utah. Those are quick flights. So instead, you know.
It's just disappointing because he's such a great player.
Oh.
And, you know, like, you want your best players in the league available in the playoffs.
Also, this makes it a lot easier for the Lakers because they're the one team that I think the Clippers to some degree and the Denver Nuggets to a larger degree really match up with LeBron. They can really put a guy on him, make him earn his points.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it's a huge loss.
It's a huge loss. By the way, Julian Edelman, 34, retired. He gave the game everything. Like, he was just physically, he can't play anymore. And I was defending Edelman earlier. I said, you have to make sacrifices sometimes when you work for a great company. I remember getting into this conversation 20 years ago with a sports columnist at a local paper. And he said his paper was going to hire a second and a third sports columnist, and he didn't like that. He wanted to be the guy. And my takeaway was, well, yeah, but your paper is better with two or three columnists. So, like, you grew up in Miami, right? And you have, not grew up, but your early career. You got a Lebertard writing a couple times a week, and then you have a Greg Cody writing a couple times a week. And they had some really good, Miami had great columnists for years. But it's a better paper for the audience because it's very hard to write four columns a week. It's easier for a columnist to write one or two columns. So the better newspapers have three or four really good columnists, but the columnists are not asked to do as much, but they're probably also, they don't get the ego fulfillment. And when you play in a great system, you have to make sacrifices. So the San Antonio Spurs asked Manu Ginobili to come off the bench. So where he averages like 17.5 points in his prime, he would average 22.5 and be a sure Hall of Famer if he would have fought it and said no, and they still would have won a bunch of games. But that's why I give Manu Ginobili a Hall of Fame vote, one of the top three or four international players ever. Troy Aikman never threw for 4,000 yards. Number one is Jimmy Johnson had Emmitt Smith and a great O-line and liked to run the ball. And secondly, Troy Aikman, for a lot of his prime years, was on a great team that led with 7 minutes to go. So Troy didn't get all those crappy junk yards, right? Like when you lead, when you trail late, you're playing catch up. I like Matt Ryan, but he gets a lot of junk yards. Matt Stafford, Detroit, got a lot of junk yards. You don't get those when you're Troy Aikman or you're Joe Montana or you're Brady. Not a lot of junk yards. You lead with 7.5 to go in 12 of your 16 games. Klay Thompson for the Warriors is another player. So Klay Thompson has Durant over there, has Steph over there. He sacrifices 7 shots a night. So Klay averages 19 a game. He's the best two-way guard in the league since, I mean, D-Wade for a while was, and now Klay is, both ends of the floor. But when he had Durant and Steph in his prime, there are nights he just doesn't get looks. Just the sacrifice. But would he give up the rings? No. He still gets his shoe deal. But Klay Thompson's a guy I would put in the Hall of Fame if his career ended now. He and Bradley Beal and D-Wade have been the best two-way guards for years. And would Klay Thompson trade his career for Bradley Beal, who gets to shoot whenever he wants to, but never plays in games that matter? No. Bradley Beal, I think in a heartbeat, would rather be Klay. Klay would never want to be Bradley. And they're both great, but Bradley gets to shoot whenever he wants. There were nights with Klay Thompson that he would play... And Durant's hot, and Curry's hot, and you're just sitting there thinking, man, I'm going to get another ring, and I didn't have to sweat tonight. So I just think with Julian Edelman, he's sacrificed in a system. They asked him to return punts. They asked him to block. He led with 7.5 minutes to go, 12 to 13 of his games a year. So he was asked to block. He didn't get junk yards. So I just think there's value to that. So do I think Edelman will get into the Hall of Fame? No. Would I vote him in? Yes. I'd vote in Eli Manning because I believe this. Joe Torre gave the ball to Mariano Rivera. He'd often pitch 8 pitches. That's it. But who do you give the ball to when it matters? Who do you throw to in the Super Bowl when it matters? Edelman for a decade. So I'm now I don't think he'll get in, but I Edelman and Eli Manning, you have to add context to it. As I said earlier, there are coaches out there who are Hall of Fame coaches that have won 57% of their games because they always took over messes and had to clean up. So I don't think, you know, let's ask Peter King. He's one of those guys that has been voting on the Hall of Fame since 1992. NBCSports.com, Football Morning in America. Peter King joining us live now. So Mariano Rivera is a fascinating one because he only has 82 wins. He often pitched 8 times, doesn't have a lot of innings pitched. But essentially, Joe Torre, he was the only guy to ever get in the Hall of Fame, not Babe Ruth, not Griffey, not Ripken, with 100% of the vote. And so I look at Edelman and I'm like, he's second all time in playoff yards and catches. Super Bowl. I'm like, well, yeah. But my gut feeling is he won't get in. Peter, your guess if he gets in.
My guess is he won't, Colin. But this is one of the reasons why I like having a 5-year waiting period. When Kurt Warner first was eligible, I thought, well, that's a Hall of Fame player. And then there was a time when I thought he wasn't a Hall of Fame player because he has a huge 4 or 5 year donut hole right in the middle of his career where either he wasn't starting or didn't play, whatever. And then at the end, I decided to vote for him because of his presence on an absolutely incredible, one of the great offenses of all time, and he was the guy who drove the bus. And he also won a Super Bowl. So here's what you have to ask yourself with Julian Edelman. And, you know, I think he might. My gut feeling is no, but I think he might. You know, there are going to be so many players from his era. Like, he's 75th all-time in receptions. And he's got 380 less catches, fewer catches, than Hines Ward, who also has a Super Bowl MVP and was maybe the best blocker of all time. He can't get a sniff in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So, again, it depends. And look, your postseason point, I think, is a very good one. And that is definitely in Edelman's favor, although he also probably played more games than all but postseason games than all but three or four receivers in history. So, you know, there's a lot going each way on Julian Edelman.
So we've said this. When the Bears drafted Trubisky, there was a lot. The scouts were totally split. And it's kind of arrogant when you move up and you're telling the league, we know better than you do. And Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are now on the hot seat. Because they're, you know, when you're a GM and you trade to move up to get a quarterback and it doesn't work at all, that's a mark that is hard to overcome. Well, the Niners have traded multiple picks to move up. And I got to tell you, Peter, Mac Jones's ceiling from the scouts that I trust is the lowest of all the ceilings. It is a gutsy move. And remember, Shanahan doesn't have a winning record right now. Not all his fault. His quarterbacks aren't healthy. But, man, that is laying a career on the line. I don't buy these reports. It's a done deal. You have said it's not a done deal with Mac Jones. Do you still believe that?
I don't think it's a done deal. I think that the 49ers go into, and I expect both Shanahan and John Lynch to be at the Justin Fields Pro Day in Columbus tomorrow. And the Trey Lance Pro Day, the second Pro Day for both, he's next Monday in North Dakota. If you're John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, and you know that the next pick is ours, we're up, you know, and you can have anybody in this pool right now other than Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence, you know, why wouldn't you go to those Pro Days and why wouldn't you keep your options open? So do I think that the pick is probably going to be Mac Jones? Yes, but I don't think that the decision has been made. And Colin, you're absolutely right. I mean, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have been there 4 years. They've had a 13-3 season. And then the other 3 years, they've won 6-6 in four games. So this pick to be the quarterback of the long-term future, theoretically, is going to have a tremendous amount of pressure on him coming in to San Francisco. So whoever it's going to be, they're going to have to deal with that aspect of it as well.
So it's interesting. I was looking at a Mel Kiper mock draft, and those are always fun, and he has Denver at 9, taking a linebacker, which they could certainly use too. Drew Lock is interesting. If you look at Drew Lock's numbers through 18 games, they're actually better than Josh Allen's. They are, believe it or not. The difference is Josh Allen just kept getting better and better and better, whereas Drew Lock feels like, to some degree, he's plateaued. And it's funny, and I said this to the team this morning. Through his first five or six starts, I really liked him. But I don't see jumps in decision-making. I don't like some of his traits. He's too casual. He's too loose. Your gut feeling in the room right now, what Denver thinks about their quarterback situation, because this morning he is easily the fourth best quarterback in that division.
I think they probably think a lot of what you think. Because, Colin, you know, you watch the games, and he is shown so far to be an average at best quarterback. And you're not winning much in that division with an average quarterback. So, you know, do I think he's going to be the quarterback of the Broncos this year? Very likely, yes. But he's going to have to play very well this year to keep that job. Now, they're sitting at a great little pivot point. To me, the fun pivot point of this draft right now is Carolina at 8, Denver at 9, Dallas at 10. Because you've got two teams that I could see coming up to 8, 9, or 10. New England at 15 and the Chicago Bears at 20. I could see both of them trading a lot of resources to come up to one of those picks to try to get a quarterback. Now, will they? I don't know. But those are the places that I think are going to be very likely. And also, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Carolina could take one. Certainly isn't out of the realm of possibility that Denver could, too. But ask yourself this question. If you are the Carolina Panthers or you are the Denver Broncos at 8 or 9, do you want to have an extra one in next year's draft to possibly address your quarterback situation again and move back to 15 or 20? 20, you'd obviously get a lot more. But to move back to 15 and get New England's one next year, you might think, well, that's maybe it's not all that valuable because the Patriots might be pretty good this year. But I think that's one thing that if you're at 8, 9, or 10 right now, you've got to think, and there's a quarterback on the board, you've got to think that some team or teams are going to be aggressive to come up to get it.
You know, it's interesting. Years ago, about 10 years ago, I was talking to Chris Mortensen, and I asked him about the Raiders. And he said to me, he goes, I don't even cover them like I cover everybody else because of the Al Davis situation. It's just that they're not even like the NFL. The way they do it, it's covert. Al has too much power. And I read the story this morning about Jeffrey Lurie and Doug Peterson and berating him every Tuesday. And I thought, That can't be normal business in the NFL. That is just, or maybe I'm just naive. I look at Philadelphia. I thought they were well run for years. What do you make of that Doug Peterson story where Tuesday he goes in and basically win or lose is there's multiple sources quoting it here saying it's just got ridiculed every Tuesday. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I thought that Doug Peterson did enough in his time there to avoid the kind of, the kind of putting you under the hot lights of interrogation, you know, from upper management. That did surprise me. But, you know, when you go into a job and when you take a job, you have to understand that there are some places, Carolina is like this now, from everything I hear, that David Tepper is a very involved owner and he wants to know everything that's going on. And so you're Scott Fitterer, the GM, you're Matt Rhule, the head coach. You know that every decision of some consequence that you make, you're going to have to get the owner on board. And so I think I was surprised by that, especially because Peterson won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Crazy story. You should go read it. Eagles reportedly treated Doug Peterson, quote, like a baby, ridiculed, criticized every decision. Even, by the way, at the beginning of year two, the year they won the Super Bowl, apparently the coaching on a weekly basis was called out by Jeffrey Lurie. Peter King, NBCSports.com, Football Morning in America. Read his stuff. Peter, great talking to you.
Thank you, Colin. Have a good one.
Yep. It's sometimes dealing with owners. I had a story from a head coach I know. So he got asked to coach. I can't say the team because you'll know who it is. He was asked to coach a football team. It's a bad operation. Has been for a long time. And he got hired. And, the owner made it clear, it's your team. I'm not meddling. And so they have to play Baltimore in like week 3 or 4. And this was when Baltimore had Ray Lewis, Saragusa, Ed Reed. The Patriots couldn't move the ball on him. And so this coach told the owner, oh, what do you think about the game against Baltimore? He said, we're going to struggle to score. The coach had to spend the next 2 hours walking around the field, talking the owner off the ledge. And he said, they have 8 Hall of Fame players. We have none. This is our, we don't have any Pro Bowlers. We got one. He's like a punter. Like we don't match up, but we will. And he said the Patriots can't struggle. Peyton Manning struggling against him. Brady struggling. That's not who we have at quarterback. This is the best defense in the NFL in a decade. And the owner went nuts. It's like, that's what you're dealing with. Billionaires get their way. They don't like being told no, or you're not going to get your way.
What's always confusing to me, though, is billionaires are also generally very smart. That's how they became billionaires and stay billionaires.
But ego
trumps.
Overwhelms smart.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
For guys. Like, you can be smart, but your ego overwhelms it.
I don't know. I don't know this life. I don't understand it. I can't
process
it.
That's how guys
think. My lady brain does not accept this.
That's how guys think. Like there's a bunch of things like common sense, smart, ego. Ego for men will eventually overwhelm all the other stuff. It's the most powerful DNA we have. Or you can look, I mean, why do guys have affairs? Why do presidents have affairs? Why does CEO have, it's just all ego.
Like if I need a new ceiling fan installed, I don't know how to do electrical work. I'm going to hire someone to do that. They know what they're doing. I'm not going to come in and be like, well, I don't know. I don't think that wire goes there. I don't know where the wire goes. That's why I hired this person to come and install it. That's essentially what you're doing. You don't know anything about coaching a football team. You don't know anything about how to put it in game plan, schemes. You barely even can say the positions. Yet you have the audacity to be upset with the coach that you hired for doing their job. All I need for in life and all I ever ask for is for things to make sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Think about a guy's brain is a series of waves. And you've got the common sense wave and the IQ wave and the decency wave and the curious wave. But the biggest wave is the ego wave. And when it comes to the shore, it blows the pier over. It blows all the houses over. It's just the biggest wave. And you can't overcome it. Guy, it just takes over everything. Control it.
That's a good visual. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's just the tsunami of all our little blocks and all little waves in our head.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Saturday on Fox, the MLS is back. Catch Austin FC as they make their league debut against Carlos Vela and LAFC. The action kicks off at 5:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
I cannot get over this, Joy. The Fox Bet NFL win totals. I can't get over it. It's a 17-game schedule. And they've got the Browns lumped in with the Cowboys, the Chargers, the Saints, and the Titans at 9.5 wins.
I don't know.
That's an indictment on Baker Mayfield. How can you have him lumped in with the Cowboys? If you go look at Cleveland's roster right now,
they had a great offseason.
Great offseason. And they're going to add Jadeveon Clowney tomorrow. In a 16-game schedule, I'd take the over on Cleveland 9.5. On a 16-game schedule. And it's scheduled. They get Detroit at home. They get Houston at home. They get Chicago at home. They get the Raiders at home. They get Denver at home. They get Arizona at home. They'll be favored in all those games by more than a field goal. I just can't. I'm betting the over on Cleveland. And it's always a sucker bet. Future bets are sucker bets because fans always bet the over. And the Browns at 9.5, I would bet the over. Boy, they don't like Tua and the Dolphins. They got the Dolphins, won 10 games last year. They're down to 8.5. I think I'd bet the over. I can't see 9-8 at worst for the Dolphins. I can't see a losing record. Their defense is great. Their special teams are great. They had a very good draft. Now they get, how many picks do the Dolphins have this year?
A lot. So even more next year.
If they hit on half, they just had that. What they need to do is get an interior offensive lineman.
And well, the thing about those numbers, though, that you always point out is this is not made by fans. This is not our list of over under predictions. They're interested in making money. So,
oh my God,
I just see something we don't.
The Browns won a playoff game last year and have upgraded their team. The Vikings were a mess last year. They only have them with one fewer win than Cleveland. I just can't even believe that number. To me, Cleveland's the best bet on the board. 9.5, Cleveland's the best bet on the board. That's an 11-6 team. 10-7, you'd be disappointed. With that roster, I think Cleveland would be disappointed with 10-7.
Well, I mean, they should win a playoff game.
Of course. It's a stacked roster. It's not Tampa. It's probably not at the highest end Kansas City. But it's in that Seattle, Rams. Rams lost their starting center and their starting safety. Rams are going to need Sean McVay and Matt Stafford to overcome to make up some ground. You know, the Rams O-line right now without Austin Blythe now, Andrew Whitworth in year, 15? Watch out. They're good at right tackle. After that, some questions. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, we're talking about rosters and the Bucs roster, and they don't have any glaring holes after bringing back all 22 starters from the Super Bowl winning team. And Bruce Arians said that selecting a quarterback to learn behind Tom Brady is definitely a possibility in this draft.
Yeah, it should be.
The right guy's there that we think is a developmental guy that has the upside that outweighs every other position of those five or six guys that we're looking at. Then, yeah, we wouldn't be against it. And, you know, same thing in the second round and the third round. If we have five guys and one's a quarterback and we think his development's better than those positions, sure.
How great is – so Bruce Arians, there's a lot of different routes to end up on top. If you look at Bruce Arians' career, he has had a lot of fun. He has had a lot of cocktails and a lot of laughs and a lot of fun and a lot of family time. He was retired. He comes out of it, and 2 years later, he has Tom Brady and the best roster in football. Like that, it's almost like, I'm not overly religious, but the guy upstairs said, and I will anoint you because of your decency and humanity, the best team and player in the league for the final 3 years of your coaching.
I think there's multiple ways to get to the top. I think dynasties all kind of have similar...
Probably.
Similar styles.
Transformational star.
Yes.
Great coach.
A system. They're not overly committal to role players.
Yeah.
They're kind of constantly keeping the same type of player within the building.
System over star.
Yeah. I think dynasties all kind of follow that.
Yeah.
But you string together good years
Bruce Arians,
doing it the fun and crazy way.
Bruce Arians probably now is going to be a Hall of Fame coach. Because if he has two more years left with Brady, his winning percentage is going to go way up. He's got to have playoff wins. So, I mean, it's just funny that he was always seen, and I like Bruce, but he was always kind of loose Bruce. He just kind of had fun. He wasn't as, you know, dogged. He was more likable. He had a real life outside of football.
Well, things also have to line up. I mean, you also convinced Tom Brady to come to Tampa in his zillionth year after learning from Bill Belichick and having that experience. You know, I don't know if a young Tom Brady and Bruce Arians have the same kind of success, you know, so
right.
So things have to fall in place. But they also signed Giovanni Bernard to a one-year deal. he reportedly chose Tampa after talking to Arians, and Brady had a couple other teams that reached out to him, but he ended up signing there
he's a real player.
Yeah, and a good receiving back,
yep.
Too. So
good receiving
good
back
for them. So the Cardinals pulled off one of the most shocking moves of 2020 when they traded David Johnson and a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick to the Texans for DeAndre Hopkins and a fourth-round pick. And the deal was recently awarded the best sports transaction of the year at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference.
Oh, boy, that's heady. That's a lot of words there.
Lots of smart sports stuff going on there. A lot of big words. The only other NFL team to ever win this award was the Raiders after trading away Khalil Mack.
Well, they got a lot of value out of that pick.
Yes.
Well, why we like DeAndre Hopkins, because in that division, and you got Shanahan and you got McVay, you got to score some points, and they have a young quarterback.
It was a great move
for
them. Despite the fact it was a great move for the Cardinals, I always thought it was a terrible move for the Texans. You have a young quarterback in his prime in Deshaun Watson there. And they have a connection. What are you doing? Like, you need to pay him. That's the purpose.
And Will Fuller gets banged up a lot. So DeAndre doesn't.
You need
doesn't.
A number one receiver. And DeAndre Hopkins is in ninth season in the NFL. He's been a Pro Bowler five times and first team All-Pro three times.
Yeah,
he's one of the top one or two receivers in the league.
He and Stephon Diggs... If I was a corner and you said, who would you not want to cover? It would be Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins in any order.
Well, 2020 in Arizona, he had 115 receptions for 1,400 yards and 6 touchdowns. He's third in the NFL in receiving yards behind Stephon Diggs and Travis Kelce. So you get the Bill O'Brien effect continues to wave throughout the NFL. So Steph Curry continues to build on his NBA legacy. Last night, he passed Wilt Chamberlain as the Warriors' all-time leading scorer. He needed 19 to set the record, and He hit that mark early with 21 first quarter points against the Nuggets. He finished with 53 points in the win and became the fourth player to have multiple seasons with three or more 50-plus point games since the 1976 merger. The other three players to do this are Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and James Harden. He is transformational. And I really don't think we give Steph, maybe we just, similar to LeBron and how we were talking about Zion, we kind of get used to seeing this level of greatness, so we get a little desensitized to it. But Steph Curry has been remarkable. And
he changed the game more than Michael Jordan did, more than LeBron did. Not saying he's better, but he changed the game more.
You can't argue it. He's probably the greatest shooter of all time.
And he changed high school, college, AAU, and pro basketball.
Yeah, he's changed basketball, like the game of basketball, not just the NBA. Because now players are seeing that having that level of skill stretches the floor in a way that we've never seen before. If you can shoot from half court consistently, you don't have to be a massive guy.
I can't think of an. Brady didn't change football. Montana didn't change football. Who has changed their sport?
Well,
that's a good trivia question at a bar about two Heinekens in. Like Steph
Curry. I think
Lawrence
Taylor changed the sport.
Well, Lawrence Taylor made you realize, that's a good one. He made you realize that outside a quarterback, nobody can influence a game like a pass rusher.
Yes.
The problem is you can't find another Lawrence Taylor on the market.
No. I think he changed the sport in that you had to have a left tackle. You had to have an offensive line. Like, it was just not available. If you have someone like Lawrence Taylor, which obviously there's not that many Lawrence Taylors, but if you have someone who to your point, is that influential at that position, you're never going to be able to play against them. So you have to have someone to block someone like Lawrence Taylor.
We should ask on Twitter. I have all my filters, so I won't see it. Maybe I'll open the filters.
No, I'm not opening the filter.
Okay. Outside of Steph Curry, in all the sports,
I would say Lawrence Taylor.
Hockey. I mean, again, you could say Gretzky, but there was no other Gretzky. He was just an outlying talent.
Yeah, see, I don't think you can count outliers. Tom Brady is an outlier.
There's always been shooters, but Steph's range and his accuracy, and by the way, he's not physically overwhelming. So you can look at Steph and go, well, I could do that. It's not like a lot of LeBron stuff. You're like, well, yeah, I can't do that.
Maybe a Michael Vick.
That's another good one. Well, Michael Vick is a very good one. Michael Vick's like, hey, I always remember Bobby Bowden had a great line, the coach of Florida State. And they beat Vick in the championship game. And he said, I got to get like a quarterback like that.
And you can even argue that Vick was a little bit ahead of his time. But I think Michael Vick, Lawrence Taylor,
Russell
Steph Curry.
Wilson, Michael Vick combo. Oh, you can have a 5'11 and a half guy that runs around and wins Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm trying to think other sports.
It's I've got to tell you, Steph is in a very elite class.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
I wonder if there's a limit on how much I can bet on Cleveland on Fox Bet. That could be my biggest bet. My biggest bet on this show was taking Clemson over Ohio State 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I bet a ton. Seriously. We had the bank had to call another bank to get a loan.
I had another big bet last year. I can't remember what it was.
Did I win? Oh, I remember what it was. Green Bay only -4 at the Houston Texans. Green Bay had been humiliated the week before, I think. And I said, in the NFL, I think it was the Green Bay-Houston game. Go back to that one. I bet a ton on that. Whenever my rule in the NFL is, when a good team gets humiliated, everybody has a crap game.
Right.
Buccaneers in Chicago. Everybody has a crap game. Kansas City loses to the Raiders. Rams lost to the Jets. Always bet a good team after they get humiliated. What did the Bucs do after they got beat by the Saints like 38-3? I forget. But it's almost always. And the Packers went down to Houston. It was like a 4.5-point spread.
Yeah, and then the spread is favorable also because it's an overreaction.
By the, you know, because when a good team loses, everybody's like, oh, they're no good. So good stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in. I don't like being a jerk, so I'm not going to be great right here. You're not going to like me much. Joy will, because she adores me, but most of you won't. So there's a story out about the Eagles, how poorly they treated Doug Peterson. Just treated him like crap. Again, this goes back to guys, smart billionaires doing dumb stuff. When you do that, coaches talk. And when coaches talk, like, don't go, they treat you bad. This is why Cleveland forever kept running through coaches. Because the organization kept firing him, didn't give him any chance. You're not going to move your daughters cross country to Cleveland. You're not going to move your kids, 7, 8, 9 years old, your wife to a place. You'd rather make a little less, remain a coordinator and not get jacked and fired in a year. That's why I've said keep a coach an extra year in most cases. It creates kind of a unified front a little bit. But when you read this story about how lousy they treated Doug Peterson, well, Peterson's telling everybody, he's like, this place is a nightmare. Chip Kelly told everybody, it's a nightmare. Chip Kelly goes 10-6. He entered his third year and they wanted him out. He'd done it with like C-plus quarterbacks. Andy Reid, one losing year, got rid of him. Doug Peterson, one losing year. He went like 13-3, 9-7, 9-7. Then they struggled, out. Chip Kelly, one out. They have no patience. But the reason they ended up with Nick Sirianni, who I wish the kid well, he's like 38, 39 years old, never been a coach, never called plays in his life, even for the Colts. He wouldn't call him plays. But the kid was overwhelmed in a Zoom meeting. And it's like, that's the reason being is all the coaches, all the good coaches are like, stay away from Philadelphia. So, of course, Nick's going to take it. He's 30-some years old. He's going to make millions of dollars. So for him, of course you take it. He never made any money. But for the guys with options, they were like, get out of here. That's why Cleveland always hired a guy that nobody else wanted. And Nick wasn't interviewing, and he's probably the greatest guy in the world. But it was so funny when they hired him, all these Philadelphia meatballs defended it. Folks, if you get overwhelmed by a Zoom meeting, you're not going to beat Pete Carroll and Andy Reid and Mike Tomlin. And I've always said this, you can see great instantly. You watch American Idol, I'm not into music. You can watch American Idol for 15 seconds and go, hack, stud. She's amazing, he stinks. It doesn't take long to see great. So Philadelphia settles for Nick Sirianni because the owner treats Peterson like garbage, and Peterson's telling all of his coaching buddies, don't go there. It's awful. He's protecting his buddies. I mean, I've worked at places previously where I've told, warned people, don't go there. Do not go there. You will not be treated like they're selling you. Come to Fox. They treat you better. I've told everybody that. They just treat people well. So when Sean McVay got hired, he was like 31 years old. Here was his opening press conference. He looks like a news anchor. He's so smooth. I mean, he looks like a president. Watch this.
We're going to be a team that's built on character. We feel that true leadership is about building and developing relationships that are going to help us create a unified vision that's sustainable over time. Our character will be the foundation, and it'll be the glue that holds us together as an organization.
The pauses, the confidence, the chest out. You can walk into a room of alphas. They are buying that. They are buying that. And within days, people were saying about McVay, my God, this guy's a rock star. He's the next Belichick. Nick Sirianni, who was like the Eagles' ninth choice, here was his first press conference.
The first part of being smart is knowing what to do. We're gonna have systems in place that are easier to learn. All right, complicated to the defense or offense that they're going against or the special teams group they're going against, but easy for us to learn. Because when we can put that, when we can learn our system and we can get good at our system, then our talent can take over. Less thinking equals talent take over, but we need to have systems in place, and we will have systems in place to do so.
My head hurts. Ugh. You going to sell that to alpha males? But why do you end up with that? Because your owner's berating Doug Peterson in year two. So Peterson's telling his allies, everybody likes Doug. Peterson's like, guys, it's brutal. It's brutal. They went 13-3 in his second year. And he's getting called. When owners treat coaches poorly and are unrealistic, you end up with the seventh option as head coach. I know I feel like a jerk doing that. But that and Eagle fans are like, well, that doesn't matter. You're an idiot. If you don't think that, the players for Philadelphia saw that. You go on a four-game losing streak, that's it. You have lost the locker room. McVay has never, ever, ever lost that locker room. As Dave Wannstedt says, you can lose games. Mike Tomlin never loses the locker room. Pete Carroll never loses the locker room.